Welcome to the Side Action Podcast, the sports gambling show that covers everything in the world of sports betting from A through Z. We'll cover the four major sports, as well as anything and everything in between worth some action, and we'll increase the size of your bankroll. And here we go.
Welcome to the Side Action, episode 21. This is Jim Weglars, a.k.a. Wegs. You can follow me at Wegspool on Twitter and Instagram.
And this is Steve Roberts, a.k.a. Action. You can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
Follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. So how'd the weekend go for you, Action?
It was down in terms of gambling. I had a great weekend, enjoyed a lot of college basketball and watching the NFL games. The Colts really disappointed me on Saturday, lost a little bit there. We'll get into that later, but then just I got killed on Sunday.
Rough How about day. You? I think we've kind of figured out that maybe you're on the sharps and I'm like the book, because I had a really good weekend actually overall. I lost the Colts game, but NFL basically went 3-1. I did a teaser, you know, for two of those games, and that came hit, and then did okay in college basketball. So overall, like 4-2 on the week, which is solid for me.
Nice. That's a great week for you.
Absolutely.
And 66%.
66. Won a couple of units there, and a lot of family time in terms of social activity. Didn't get to see much of the games on Saturday, but Sunday I just kind of parked in front of the TV and watched those games, which weren't as great.
Yeah. On my personal note, I hit the Chicago Boat Show on Ooh. Saturday, one of my personal favorites here in town.
Nice.
Checked out some of the new watercrafts in the area and walked through some yachts. Maybe if I win enough units, I can have one someday.
That's right. You're going to be balling. You're going to have all those ladies on the yachts, the bikinis, like the pictures. You can be outside for 2 months a year here in Chicago.
Yeah, there you go. It's hard to picture yourself on the lake right about now as it's mid-20s, but we'll move on.
The frozen, that's right. All right, well, let's jump into this episode, review what we've got going on here. We've got a legislative update, really more of an informational update on the big DraftKings championship this weekend and this past weekend in New Jersey. We'll go with our head-to-head from what happened over the weekend and the week, our takeaways from the divisional round in the NFL, which was not as exciting as we had hoped, but, you know, we got a couple mailbag questions. We love mailbag questions from our listeners, so thank you out there. We'll take a look at the NFL matchups for the next round, noting injuries and situational spots. And then you've actually updated some sportsbook information in terms of the matchups and some prospective odds, which is exciting.
Yeah, we'll talk about the prospective Super Bowl matchups and see which one you like best.
That's right. And then we'll also talk a little bit about Kyler Murray. He's been making big news in the NFL, declaring for the draft. And then a little touch on Australian Open tennis. We'll talk about some odds there that's happening as we speak, as well as college hoops, which we'll dig deep into that, as we always. And then finally, we have a couple other topics that we usually don't cover. So, Melissa, hopefully you're happy. We're going to be doing some NBA topics a little bit. And we'll also just briefly talk about this trend that everybody's talking about in the NHL first period puck line. Everybody's winning money, including Action here. So before we hit our head-to-head, sounds like a full episode.
Yeah, we got a lot to get to.
Let's get after it. As we talked about the legislative update, which is really an informational update, we've got the DraftKings National Betting Championship took place in New Jersey over the weekend. And it looks like there were 260 entrants. You had a $10,000 entry fee with $5,000 going to the prize pool. And it was a big payday if you won, $2.5 million in prizes overall. So what happened out there?
Well, I didn't hear about this before the weekend started, but I was following Twitter most of the weekend, and there was a lot of buzz about it. Mm-hmm. Apparently, there was all these pro gamblers who mm-hmm. were attracted to the prize pool because there was such a huge overlay and some positive EV for them, and right. that drew them in. And you had to be in New Jersey to participate Correct. On the DraftKings app. And the prize money went to the top 25 finishers in terms of their end of the tournament bankroll. Mm-hmm. And the players got to keep all their real life earnings.
Oh, that's nice.
So, I mean, it sounded really interesting, but on Sunday there was major controversy as the guy who was in first place, a pro bettor by the name of Rufus Peabody, mm-hmm. was unable to get in his final bet before the Eagles and Saints game started, where a lot of his competitors actually were able to take their winnings from the Patriots game and roll them into that final game, and he ended up finishing in third place. He still won $330,000, but it was far cry from a million.
Absolutely. Yeah, I should have mentioned this last week. We had a lot of updates last week, but yes, I've been hearing this promotion for 2 weeks now on VSiN, and they actually had Rufus on Monday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, on Follow the Money, their morning show, and he was describing the situation and how, yeah, on the app it wasn't rolling the money over, but you had mentioned that the guys that jumped him, basically, they went to the help desk or something to get that credited immediately, and they were able to make those final bets to jump him in the standings.
Yeah, it sounds like the DraftKings app graded all the bets at the same time, but mm-hmm. some of the players' accounts were credited faster because they went and pushed at the help desk to try to get their money in sooner so they could make that bet on the mm-hmm. final game. Mm-hmm. And Rufus claims that he was going to make a parlay of the under and the Saints on an alternative spread, which would have won, but who knows what he really would have bet.
He still won $330. I'm not going to cry for him, but it sounds like DraftKings and, you know, FanDuel, these guys are going to do these mm-hmm. type of contests all over the place, so you'll see it in the states that are legalized. I think that's what they do best. They do great marketing efforts, and in the end, it sounds like they need to work out the kinks, but everybody was talking about it, including Action on our podcast.
It'll be interesting to see if some of the new states that come online in 2019 do similar promotions mm-hmm. and almost like regional championships or state championships where you can get like a satellite ticket into the national championship. So
that's how they do their fantasy contests. There's mm-hmm. the big, you know, FCCs that they do throughout the year. So maybe there will be something like that, like a season-long NFL contest, and then at the end, maybe divisional round, you qualify for the championship round or something like that. That would be awesome.
And the most fascinating part that I heard an interview with Rufus this morning as well, and he talked a lot more about how he was looking at game theory more so than the actual spreads or the football games or basketball or golf he was betting on. He was actually analyzing his opponents that he was going against and trying to determine which way he was going to bet that way to give himself a positive EV, which I found incredibly fascinating.
Now, he's a daily fantasy player too, I think. Okay. So he definitely is into that game theory. There's a lot of guys out there in the daily world that in those big contests, they have to think outside the box and basically go contrarian theory. And it makes sense. In these contests, you got to have an edge. So it's not just in an individual game, but how to bet. So that's exciting. We'll have to do that next year.
Yeah. Maybe.
All right. Well, let's go into our recap. We had some big head-to-heads this week. We'll start off with the big basketball game, Duke at Florida State. Florida State was getting 9 points at home. This was actually a great game. I didn't actually get to see it because of that party I was mentioning, but I understand that Florida State was up late, and then Duke ran an out-of-bounds play. R.G. Barrett hit a jumper in the corner, a three, to take the lead, but they did. Florida State did cover the number for me in this head-to-head, and Zion Williamson also got dinged up a little bit.
Yeah, I missed the game also. I was at the boat show, but I watched the highlights, and it looks like that Zion did get knocked out in the first half, which I'm sure was a huge detriment to the Blue Devils' ability to cover. But R.J. Barrett had a huge game, 32 points, and knocked down the game winner that ultimately gave them the victory.
Interesting. We'll talk later, but both those teams, maybe it was a little letdown spot after that come Monday.
Wish I would have known that last night.
Exactly. Now we'll talk a little football. Your Indianapolis Colts at Kansas City. Indy was getting 5 points. I was listening to our pod from last week on the way here today, and we basically couldn't have been more wrong in this situation, but we'll talk a little more about that. The game did hit under, which is what I picked, at the total of 57. It just basically the Chiefs just kind of dismantle this Colts offense and did what they did on the defense.
Yeah, the most surprising aspect of this game was the way Kansas City just dominated the Colts on defense. Indianapolis couldn't move the ball in the first half and were lucky to get that score on the blocked punt. And even in the second half, the Chiefs defense really shut them down again. Although Indianapolis did move the ball a little bit more, they still couldn't find the end zone. And ultimately, the game stayed under, which was a surprise to me, and the Chiefs just destroyed them.
They did. So a lot of that stuff about the first-time quarterbacks, and you know, we got to add that reel that we talked about, the way big misses reel, where I was like, Andrew Luck's a better quarterback than Pat Mahomes.
Yeah. Thankfully, for me, I was able to mitigate some of the damage. I know I texted you on Saturday morning. I found a prop on Bovada, and then a separate offering at Bet Online where they had the same prop, the total sacks in the game as 4.5. Mm-hmm. And at Bet Online, the over was +125. And at Bovada, the under was +105. Huh. So I was sitting there all morning just hitting each website back and forth. I was only doing it in $25 increments because I wasn't sure what the final limit would be.
Right.
And I didn't want to get shut out one way or the other. Ultimately, I ended up getting down like $130 on each side. And thankfully, the over hit. So I ended up making more money just the 5%. It ended up being 25%, which is nice.
Nice work. All right, the next game was the Dons, my mighty San Francisco Dons, were hosting Gonzaga. Gonzaga was, they were favored in the game, but what was the favorite? What was it?
Seven.
Seven,
what
okay.
We graded
at seven. Yeah, I was watching this game a little bit, and it was at the bar when I was watching it, and the Dons were up by 2 points with 3:40 to go, and I thought this was in the bag. I mean, they were playing great. Gonzaga just turned on the Jets, and as you put, 17-2 run to finish the game, mm-hmm. and not only cover, but recover easily by 13 points. So the Dons and my hopes were crushed.
Yeah, it was quite a run there for Gonzaga, and really just kind of hammers home the point that we talked about last week, where these favorites of 7 to 10 points mm-hmm. are going to try to extend that margin at the end of the game, because the coaches and the players all understand what that net rating means to their seeding.
That's right.
When the NCAA tournament season rolls around.
Yeah, so I'll try to remember that on future bets, but I didn't on that one. I lost that bet as well, personally. The last game was the Chargers at New England. The Chargers were 4-point dogs at New England. We talked about this. I was happy to see it come in, and it did help me on my straight-up bet in this one. And, I don't know what to say. The Chargers didn't show up. I mean, the New England just came out and just rolled them. They were running all over them. Short passes, running Sony Michel down their throat. I think James White had 15 receptions in the game mm-hmm. for 97 yards. Brady looked sharp. They only threw the ball to Gronk once, and the Chargers just kind of didn't know what hit them, and it was a 35-7 lead at halftime. The game was basically over.
Yeah, I thought a lot about this game after I lost my butt. I really think that the major difference in this game was the coaching mismatch.
Exactly.
Bill Belichick and the Patriots staff just had a game plan that the Chargers did not expect, and mm-hmm. Anthony Lynn and his staff refused to change throughout the entire first half. They were playing that same defense with 7 DBs, and the Patriots just lined up and rammed it down their throats. They went to the short passing game, which eliminated the effect of Bosa mm-hmm. and Melvin Ingram on the outside,
yep.
and they couldn't get any pressure because the ball was coming out so fast, or they were running draws right by them.
Mm-hmm.
So the LA Chargers, just a pitiful performance, and the game ended up going over too.
Yeah,
I had that. And so it was just a miserable day for me altogether.
Well, better luck next year. I mean, the Chargers are going to be back. Rivers still has another year in them, I'm sure. But New England, they're just unbelievable at home. Mm-hmm. Home covers, especially in the playoffs. So they got to go on the road this week.
Yeah, that should be interesting.
Some of the takeaways from the divisional round in general, obviously all the favorites came back in the straight up this week. We talked a lot last week about, 14-1?
Yeah, 14-1 run.
14-1 run. Mm-hmm. So it was 3-1 this weekend against the spread, and all the home teams won. I was talking a little bit last week about the 26-10 since 2009. Make that 30-10. That means 75% winners of home teams in this round. So our picks weren't great, but hopefully you guys learned some things and made some money. What do you have about the Saints?
The Saints really struggled early on, mm-hmm. which surprised me tremendously. The first half, and specifically the first quarter, they couldn't move the ball. And the one thing that I took away from the beginning of that game was Drew Brees just doesn't look 100% healthy.
Mm-hmm.
He missed two separate deep balls. The first play of the game to Ted Ginn that got intercepted.
Right.
And then later in that half, a deep pass to Taysom Hill, which was short too. So mm-hmm. as an overbetter, that scares me. As a Saints backer, that scares me a little bit, because I think this offense is really trending downward.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about that a little bit more later.
There is speculation he has a shoulder injury. Nobody's talking about it, but I think you're right. He can make those intermediate and short throws. That longer pass, like you mentioned, we'll see what happens. I trust Brees, but man, it would be a shame to have him go down like this in this game.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about earlier in the season how much I hate the Taysom Hill passes, but he came in and threw
a beautiful dime
to Kamara later in that game.
Oh, my God, that was a throw. The Rams, we kind of talked about that last week, and actually – all over the channels. VSiN, everywhere was promoting the Cowboys.
Yeah.
And I got to be honest with you, I teased these two games down, and you know, both of them worked out. I didn't need the tease for the Rams game, but the thing is that the Clapper, you got to remember the coaching differential again.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that, I don't know, I guess they just kind of decided to abandon the run with Zeke Elliott, but one of the things that they don't do in Dallas, and as an aside, the Rams won 30-22 in this game if you didn't follow it. First of all, they couldn't stop the run, which was surprising, but they abandoned the run with Zeke Elliott, and instead of trying to get him involved in the passing game like they should have, it just turned into they were just kind of getting rolled and trying to, you know, force the ball into other players, and they just couldn't keep up with the Rams.
Yeah, Dominican Sue had a huge game on that defensive line, which mm-hmm. mitigated some of the Cowboys' running advantage. And beyond that, the L.A. Rams' rushing game was phenomenal.
They were.
Todd Gurley looked as good as new, running for 115 yards and a score. And the rebirth of C.J. Anderson, the bowling ball, was even better than Gurley, 123 yards and two touchdowns.
Yep.
And, I mean, going forward into the NFC Championship, I sure hope the Saints and Sean Payton are taking notice of that, because it's going to be imperative that they stop that running game this weekend.
Absolutely. Thanks for the segue. Two of the notes that I have from the weekend. First of all, and it kind of ties in, one is time of possession. All four teams that won dominated time of possession. Kansas City had the ball almost 40 minutes in their game, which is just a destruction. New England, 38 minutes. New Orleans, almost 38 minutes, and then the Rams 36 minutes. So they all took the approach to just dominate the run game. I put down here the net yards rushing. The Rams ended up doing plus 223 yards rushing in that game because Zeke only got 50 yards in that game. New England plus 136, Kansas City plus 93, and New Orleans plus 88. So The bottom line is you run the ball, you win.
Yeah. Clearly, that was the name of the game in the divisional weekend.
We'll see what happens going forward, but I think that'll be a key factor, and these are the four best offenses around. Let's transition into our mailbag now. First question, maybe I'll let you throw it out there.
What is the single biggest adjustment, Wegs, you and Action have made in your gambling since you started the podcast?
Well, I got to be honest with you, I didn't really bet that much going into the podcast, so I have adjusted all along. A couple things I've learned from Action right away. One is to track all my bets, And I've been doing that consistently.
Good advice.
I have this whole spreadsheet tracker tracking my winnings. I mean, obviously the sites do it, but they make it a little tough for you.
Uh-huh.
So it's easy to do it on the side. The other thing I'm doing is, you know, we're coming up with our own indices, right? I've got my NFL index. I'm trying to do something with KenPom. You've got your Action index for basketball. We used to look at S&P Plus for college football. So we're really using metrics 100% in these bets. Not that we don't go with gut or think about the narratives in terms of quarterbacks or something, but I'm definitely looking first at the metrics, and then I'm looking at the narrative. And then the last thing is just kind of looking at BetOnline is where I'm betting. I'm looking at the VIG. I'm looking at teasers. I'm looking at how I can kind of cover myself and not expose myself to too much of a loss. So that's what I've done. So I've learned a lot.
Yeah, I think that last point you made there is really something that I've learned recently too, is keeping an eye on that VIG that you're paying. Historically, in years past, I would see a side of a game that I like and have no worry about laying minus 120
right.
or minus 125 in some cases, or even minus 115. Mm. But nowadays, I'm being extra careful about the VIG that I'm paying because I've learned over time, the more bets you make, it really, really increases the numbers you have to hit to be profitable.
That's right.
So that's super important. I recently opened an account at Five Dimes, which has reduced juice down to minus 105, pretty standard. And usually I'll find games at 103 and 101, which I'm hopeful in the long run is going to make me much more profitable.
No doubt.
The other biggest change that I've made is I'm looking at lines way, way sooner than I ever have before in years past. That means looking on Sunday afternoons for football games for the next week.
Mm-hmm.
And then for basketball and hockey, I'm looking at lines the night before the games, which I never used to do in the past. And it makes a huge difference if you can get an extra point or two of line value, sometimes five or six on totals.
You mentioned that earlier. We talked a little bit about tonight's game. We're not going to cover it, but you know, Virginia Tech's going to Virginia. I saw the game yesterday. I was checking out for the podcast, doing some research. I saw that Virginia Tech was a 9-point underdog, but I didn't pull the trigger. I waited. Look, today, 7.5. That's what I bet it at, which I regret that. You said you got 8.5 last night.
Yeah, 8.5 on the Hokies.
I mean, that's an extra point. That's huge, especially in these games. So that's smart work. The other mailbag question is, what's the average time period that you use to consider making a wager on a game?
For me, I'll answer that a couple of ways. Mm-hmm. It's different, obviously. It depends on my handicap. There are a number of different ways that I look to handicap. I use the betting percentages and the money percentages oftentimes to try to look for reverse line movement and where I think sharp money is coming in. Most of the time in those games, it's a very small amount of time. I'll know the teams, obviously, but if I see that wave of money coming in and I'm sure that it's sharp, I'm going to bet it in under 5 minutes, probably. But other cases, and I've been doing this more and more this year, is especially in football, where I'm actually putting some analysis into these games, looking at the numbers, the S&P numbers, and the DVOA for NFL games. And some of those, I'm spending probably upwards of an hour and a half or 2 hours really diving in and handicapping a game. How about you?
Well, as I mentioned, you know, doing these various indices, indexes that I have, I mean, that takes a good 3-4 hours a week. You know, I'm doing a lot of information there. Depends on how many sports we're doing here. But if I'm doing, for example, college basketball, and I'm doing my KenPom comparison, I mean, I'm cranking through all top 50 teams in the KenPom. And then I'm also looking at their matchups for the week. And I'm trying to pre-determine which matchups I like and figure out, ooh, that could be a spot. That's how we come up with the games we talk about. With the NFL, what I was doing for the last 10 weeks or so kind of was the same thing. I do that deep dive and then identify where the line, not the line movement, but kind of the line inefficiency based on my index. And so a lot of that is pre-work. And then once I see it, I'm just looking at where the VIG is over the day or two coming up to pull the trigger. So it's the bet itself is quick, but the analysis takes time.
Yeah, so you've done the analysis way ahead of time, and then you're just kind of plugging in, playing the numbers, and that gives you an idea of which side you want to be on.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Well, let's go into the next matchups for the NFL. We're going to the championship round here. I'll give you a quick overview of the WEGS NFL Index now. With the teams remaining from the original index coming out of the regular season, you basically have the top 2 through 6 teams. So number one were the Bears, of course. And then you had the Patriots and Rams, Saints and Chiefs. So basically, it's not a surprise that these teams are at this level. But one of the things I keep mentioning is that the difference between these teams is so slim now that the top team at Patriots and Rams at 5.2 in the index, which is just an average rank, and the Chiefs at 5.7 is the slimmest as it's ever been.
Wow.
And I kind of went back through my history of since 2009, which is when I started doing some of the stuff. I looked at some of the matchups because our matchups this weekend, for example, New England and Kansas City, there's only a 0.5 difference in the index, which is super slim. And then the Rams New Orleans is even closer at 0.3. There's only been 4 games since 2009 that have been this close in the championship round. And most of those games lead to some pretty good games. One exception would be Arizona at Carolina, which is in 2015. That was a difference of 0.17. That was a blowout. Carolina killed them. But the other 3 games were really great games. You had Green Bay at Seattle in 2014, if you remember that game.
I do.
Green Bay had them on the ropes and kind of let them up. And, you know, Seattle pulled it out. It was a great game. San Francisco at Atlanta in 2012, and that was – San Francisco made a late push because they were come back in that game and they won with Kaepernick. And then the other one was Minnesota at New Orleans in 2009 with Favre at the helm in Minnesota. And really Favre kind of gave the game away. That went into overtime and then there was interception. So all those games are kind of pointing to, for me, some really good games this week, and at least I hope so.
So are you saying that you're just tossing out the index this week and kind of making your picks on the feeling or the gut? Or
a little bit. I actually go a little bit deeper and I look category by category and see where there are advantages. And then I am sticking with some narratives that are not in the index this time because it's so close.
It's funny you say that. I was reading an article on Football Outsiders in the DVOA rankings for this week, and they mentioned the exact same thing, that all four of these teams are so tightly bunched that it's really hard to find an edge one way or another versus New Orleans to LA and Kansas City and New England. So it should make for a great entertaining football, and the spreads bear that out as you can see, both games are in that 3-3.5 range,
which is basically just a home, right? Home game,
the home field advantage.
Let's talk about that injury. So the Saints, I noted, lost Sheldon Rankins. Looks like he tore his Achilles, which will hurt the defense for the Saints, which, you know, they're the best run defense left, and that's against the Rams. You got Eric Berry on there?
Yep. Eric Berry for the Chiefs did not play against the Colts this past weekend after playing in both Week 16 and 17. And still questionable for him to play this weekend against New England, which will be big against that passing attack.
Essential, especially against Gronk, you know. And then Sammy Watkins did play well last week, so that's no issue. All right, well, let's look at these spots. This is going to be tough. You know, we talked before the pod. We'll go head-to-head, but let's talk about the actual situational spots that we would definitely bet or looking at betting this week. Rams at Saints. The Saints are 3.5-point favorites at home. The total is 56.5. Personally, I like the under in this game. I know it's a little crazy. The first time these two teams played, it was, what, 45-35? That's an 80-point total. It was a track meet early. The Saints came out gunning, and then the Rams kind of caught up, and then the Saints basically edged out in the end. But I just think that when you look at how these teams are going to attack each other, I think it's going to be more of a ground game than you expect, and time of possession is going to play in. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that you're onto something there. I think we mentioned earlier that the Saints offense has not been playing as well recently as they did earlier in the year, and the numbers bear that out too. They have slipped over the last few weeks. They dropped to 10th and weighted offensive DVOA, which throws out weeks 1-5 and gives a discount to the numbers in weeks 6-11 and really kind of focuses on in on the last portion of the regular season and then the first game from the divisional round. And their offense, just in the naked eye, they don't look as good as they had earlier in the season.
Right.
So I think that lends itself to lower scoring. And I agree with you that both teams are going to be looking to run the ball in this game, which is going to make the clock run a little bit faster and go for a little bit lower scoring. I will mention, too, that historically the total in this game and the AFC Championship both being over 55 is rather historic.
Right.
There's only been 11 totals in playoff history that have closed at a number of 55 and above.
Wow.
And coincidentally, Drew Brees and the Saints were involved in four of those. And the over in those games went 7-4.
Okay.
So it does scare me a little bit that this game is being played inside in the dome on the fast track and the turf. But if I had to lean, I would agree with you that the under is probably the bet to play. As far as the side goes, I know we'll talk about that later, but in week 9, the Rams closed as 2-point favorites here in the dome.
They did.
And I think it's rather interesting now. Since then, the narrative has changed that much to it's a 5.5-point move. Seems like kind of a lot to me, especially the way that the Saints have been playing lately. So I would lean towards the Rams, and I'm probably going to be betting them as more of a hedge on my Super Bowl bet that I have with the Saints.
Yeah, I ended up actually, didn't mention that, I ended up picking the Saints. I took the Saints future because I have the Rams future. I have a future ticket. It's plus 900 for them to win the Super Bowl. So today I ended up buying New Orleans plus 175, just a mild hedge.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, chances are good that one of these NFC teams could win the Super Bowl.
That's right. They are favored on that side. Okay, how about the other game? Patriots at Chiefs. Chiefs are 3-point favorites at home. The total actually started at 57. It's gone down to 54.5. As you might have heard, there's supposed to be some horrible weather.
Yeah,
so that's kind of playing
10 degrees high.
So that'll be kind of like a freezer bowl. What do you think in this game?
Well, I probably lean towards the under initially, although it opened at 59.5 and was quickly bet down to 57. And then since the weather news broke, it looks like it's down at 54.5 right now. So
right.
I don't really know if I would be going under 54.5 if it tends back up again this week towards 57. I probably think that there's some value there. Same reasoning. I think the Patriots are going to come in and try to run the ball much like they did last week against San Diego. And I think that Kansas City is going to be looking to have the same game plan too. Damian Williams played really well last weekend, and that offensive line was getting a huge push against the Indianapolis Colts. And I think that in a cold game like this, that they're probably going to try to run the ball and keep that clock moving again.
Yeah, I agree with that. I probably will tease this somehow. That's okay. What I'm going to look at. If that total is that low at 54.5, originally I put under when it was 57. I was feeling strong about that. Mm-hmm. But if I can get an extra 6 points, get up to 60, 60.5, that might be a good play for teaser. And then tease it with, you know, if I'm looking at Patriots or whatever here. One of the things you've noted, you said the Patriots are 7-1 straight up and against the spread in their last 8 games as an underdog. Mm-hmm. But as we know this year, they're pretty bad on the road, 3-5 on the road, straight up and against the spread. There's a lot of different numbers flying at us in this one. Plus, I did some more research that I didn't put on here. You know, the Patriots actually haven't won. They've been to 8 straight conference title games. They've lost the last 2, actually the last 3 on the road that they've played. Okay. They haven't won an AFC championship game on the road since, I believe it was Pittsburgh in the 05 game.
Wow.
And then they beat Pittsburgh again in 01. So it's not boding well for them to play great on the road, but you got to figure that 10 degrees helps them out, and we could talk more, I guess, in the head-to-head on that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think the weather temperature definitely gives the Patriots an edge, and you also have to consider the Bill Belichick edge. I mean, mm-hmm. He has a massive advantage over every coach in the league, and Andy Reid has really struggled in the playoffs. Yep. The victory over Indianapolis was really one of the only big games that he's won in a decade or more since he left Philadelphia for Kansas City. So as far as the side goes, I probably won't be choosing, but I know we're going to pick this later in head-to-head. So.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple other stats later. Why don't you go over the Super Bowl matchup betting's perspective odds here that you see right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned that all 4 of these teams are tight, and mm-hmm. The look-ahead lines for the Super Bowl says the same thing, too. These came from the Superbook USA. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs and Saints would be New Orleans -1.5.
Nice.
And the total of 59.5. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs and the Rams would be a pick 'em with a total of 63, the highest of the 4 matchups.
Right.
The Patriots and Saints would be, again, a Saints 1.5-point favorite and a total of 56.5. Mm-hmm. And the Patriots versus the Rams would also be a pick 'em with a total of 57.5.
There's a lot of storylines there. I mean, obviously, Pats Rams, that's a rematch of the, you know, 01 Super Bowl, or at least the 2001 season. Pats Saints, I mean, you got the 2, you know, grizzled veteran quarterbacks. I think that's mm-hmm. phenomenal. And definitely, actually, for me, on that pool that I have via the Ida people, I've got Pats Saints and Saints being the champ there. So I would love to see, you know, it would be great if Breeze went to the Super Bowl and beat Peyton Manning and Brady. That'll be a storyline. Cool. Chiefs-Rams, we obviously saw that. That was over 100 points scored in that first game. And then Chiefs-Saints, I mean, it's just an offensive show, although, you know, they haven't been playing so well. So all great, but you can see that those totals are really high, so they're definitely anticipating a lot of offense for sure.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to see Chiefs and Rams again and see where that number gets to, mm-hmm. because 63 now, we both know what was scored in the first game. Mm-hmm. It could get to an outrageous value, and then I think there would be some real value in going under in that game after all the public has their say.
Exactly.
And conversely, I think if the Patriots and the Saints meet up, that total of 56.5 looks a little bit low to me.
A little light, yeah.
And I probably would be looking to go over. So those would be my 2 picks out of the bunch.
Nice. All right, well, let's talk about Kyler Murray. Obviously, Kyler Murray played for Oklahoma, won the Heisman. He actually played great against Alabama when he got his chance. And he was a baseball guy. He already signed with the A's, right? But mm-hmm. now, I guess, he's essentially declaring for the NFL. So what do you got here for odds from Bovada?
Well, there's been a ton of props that have popped up in my news feed, but mm-hmm. one I picked out that I figured we could talk about today was the over-under for the pick. This is from Bovada. The over 28.5 is +195. And okay. if you want to bet under 28.5, you're going to pay -250. Hmm. So this tells you that it looks like Kyler is going to be selected in the first round, which I find rather interesting given his stature. Mm-hmm. I've seen some reports saying that he might only be 5'8", even though Oklahoma lists him as 5'10" in the program. Mm-hmm. And obviously his size, you know, he's short, but he is a small guy too.
Oh yeah, he's not big.
Doesn't weigh much, and he's nowhere nearly built as well as Russell Wilson or Drew Brees.
Or Baker. I think it's really curious. There have been a lot of people talking on VSiN and even the NFL Network on Sirius that he'd make more money in the pro football or whatever. Uh-huh. I mean, I guess that's endorsement money. That's what I understand. But to me, it's kind of a no-brainer. You got to play baseball, unless he's not good at baseball. I'm sure he's good enough to get drafted, but you can have a 10, 15-year career. I know a quarterback, you can do it, but you got to be elite to do that.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit crazy. I agree he's probably a second-round pick, but the NFL is quarterback-starved. And, I mean, when Nick Foles, who played well, he's going to be commanding big money. Joe Flacco's going to be commanding big money. And the truth is this quarterback class is really bad.
Yeah.
So I would definitely – I mean, the under is the pick, but, man – I don't think he really is a first-round pick, personally. But.
No, and Cliff Kingsbury, the new coach of the Arizona Cardinals, who's going to be selecting first, indicated a couple of weeks ago that he'd be interested in Murray. So,
oh, my God. Crazy.
There's no way they're taking him first, but that would be wild.
Well, especially because he already has Rosen, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's transition into the Australian Open quickly. You've got the men's and women's odds here. It looks like Djokovic has a 45% chance to win the tournament. Mm-hmm. He's a plus 120 favorite at this time, with Federer at plus 450, Nadal plus 800, Zverev?
Alexander Zverev. Uh-huh.
At plus 1,000, Cilic at plus 2,500, and so on. Is there anybody you like on that list?
No, I'm not going to be betting on this. I just thought it'd be interesting to put on here. Djokovic is clearly the huge favorite here, and yes. I don't think you could look anywhere else. Yeah. I will probably be looking at the tournament on the ATP side and the WTA in terms of match-to-match betting. Mm-hmm. There are tons of different ways that you can bet tennis, whether it's just the match winner, or you can bet over or under a total number of games throughout the sets. You can bet game spreads, set spreads, number of sets winning. There's tons of ways that you can bet tennis, so I'll probably dabble a little bit over the next few weeks.
They've been talking in VSiN a little bit about this, and the guy gave two winners out yesterday, so I should listen. I'll go over the women's odds quickly. Serena, plus 400 is the favorite. Kerber is plus 800. Sabalenka, plus 1,200. You're giving me a test on these. Svitolina, plus 1,400. And Osaka, plus 1,500. Again, I like Sloane Stephens at plus 2,500. You know, I like her. But yeah, I haven't been watching enough tennis right now. I know if Schwa lets Liz listen to this, she's a huge tennis person. We should get her on.
Maybe Liz has a pick for us.
Exactly. She definitely knows her French Open and Wimbledon better than anybody, so...
I was reading that Aryna Sabalenka has some serious value at 1,200, although you probably could have gotten her at close to 2,000 pre-tournament or a few weeks ago, in fact. So some of that value has been zapped, but I was reading good things about Sabalenka. Never heard of her until yesterday, though.
There you have it. Let's jump back into our normal bread and butter, college hoops. We've got a recap. Your guy from Marquette, Marcus Howard, went off, huh?
Yeah, after we recorded last week, Marquette guard Marcus Howard dropped 53 points against Creighton.
Guy's incredible.
And willed them back to an unlikely 106-104 overtime victory.
It's an NBA game.
He had 13 of 15 from the free throw line and 10 of 14 from the three-point line, including a streak in overtime where he scored 11 straight for Marquette.
Wow, that's incredible. He is obviously an NBA player for sure. He's one of those guys that come tournament time, better watch out. I mean, we do that points pool, but besides that, I mean, he can take over a game by himself and maybe knock off one of the big dogs.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be talking about that as we get closer to tournament time, but Marcus Howard is going to be one of the top picks in the player pool, without a doubt.
Absolutely. You've noted some other big wins. Villanova beat Creighton on the road. Creighton had a tough week.
I'll say.
Tennessee won at Florida, as I told you before the pod. It was a close, hard-fought game, and Tennessee ended up opening up at the end, and they did the Gator Chomp to the student section at Florida.
Wow, that may come back to haunt them later in the season.
Exactly. Texas Tech took down Texas. Ole Miss, man, Kermit Davis is making that team play. They beat Mississippi State on the road. Mm-hmm. Louisville, yeah, they went to North Carolina and spanked them. That was crazy.
Yeah, the Louisville win at North Carolina was probably the most surprising outcome of the weekend for me.
Mm-hmm. You got Kansas State losing at Iowa State. Iowa State, who are you? You beat Kansas one week and lose to Kansas State the other. Mm-hmm. And then Purdue at Wisconsin. They finally, metrically coming back, beating the Badgers.
Yeah, you and the Sharps have been on that Purdue team, and they came through on Friday night.
And Rutgers, man. How did Ohio State lose to Rutgers, man?
That's a game that may come back to haunt them around tournament seeding time.
They've kind of played poorly. So you've noted the Zion Williamson injury, but there's also some other injuries of note for Duke.
Yeah, so Zion went down Saturday, and I read that he had double vision in that game against Florida State. So he sat out the rest of the game, but did come back and played last night in the Monday night thriller against Syracuse. But they lost their point guard, Trey Jones, early on in the first half. And it turns out this morning I read that he has a shoulder injury. It's an AC joint separation, and it sounds like he's going to be out indefinitely.
It's critical. It's critical.
I mean, it was clear. I watched a bit about that game last night, and without Trey Jones, this Duke team is a different team altogether. They couldn't get into their offense, and defensively, they completely were changed. I think they ran out to an 11-0 lead with Trey Jones putting some serious ball pressure on. As soon as he went out of the game, Syracuse just could get into their offense, and they ended up putting up over 90 points, and they won the game at Cameron last night.
Yeah, Cam Reddish sat out as well. That's kind of a note, but it looks like Duke is not, they're not invincible. They can't be beaten. And so now you kind of look at it, they've got a big matchup against Virginia. We'll talk about in the head-to-head. So watch out. Obviously, it's still, hopefully, I actually hope the kid comes back because you want them full strength. There's some great teams out there. You don't want to have teams half strength.
Unfortunately for them, they won't have much time to prepare without their point guard with a huge game against Virginia this weekend.
Exactly. I'll go quickly over the KenPom versus AP, just kind of the, you know, after Monday's games, the overrated, underrated. Overrated teams, Florida State, they actually kind of fell hard. They also lost last night in the letdown spot after losing to Duke on that heartbreaker. Indiana, they're struggling, as we've noted. Mississippi State, yeah, they've been good, but they're a little overrated in the AP. Ole Miss, as much as I love them with Kermit, they shouldn't be in the top 25 yet. Houston, we talked about that. They've got decent metrics, but not top 25 worthy. Marquette, obviously they've got the guy who's scoring, but overall their metrics aren't that great. And Iowa is the other overrated team. The team's underrated in the index for KenPom or Nebraska, and that team's hard to figure out.
Yeah.
Wisconsin as well. Purdue, you know, I love them. Iowa State is underrated, although I don't know if I trust it right now. TCU definitely is underrated. They should be better. They're a good team. Florida took it on the chin against Tennessee, but they should be in there. And Louisville, I think that's a hell of a team, too.
Got some serious Big Ten flavor there in the underrated grouping. I definitely agree on Nebraska. They looked dominant last night at Indiana.
They did.
And although I wasn't sure about this Purdue team, they're rattling off some big wins. And they've got a freshman by the name of Travion Williams who's been playing extremely well and played great against Wisconsin. So I also like Louisville. What a win they had at North Carolina.
Yeah, that was a big one. They were big underdogs, and they beat them bad. So talk to me about the action index this week. How are we looking?
Well, finally, we've had some shuffling after the conference play got together. Duke's still number one. Michigan State's jumped up to number two, and that team is playing incredibly well right now.
Sparty's doing it.
Virginia, number three. Gonzaga, four. And Tennessee, five. And for the first time this year, I feel like this is a legit top five.
Yep.
All five of these teams have got to be favorites to make it to the Final Four. Mm-hmm. And then you've got a little bit of a drop-off when you see North Carolina at number six, Michigan, seven, Virginia Tech, number eight, Texas Tech, number nine, and Kansas at 10 with the loss of Azubuike.
You do have, I mean, we've got big matchups. Virginia Tech's going to Virginia tonight as we tape this. Michigan, you know, really, State of Michigan's really good this year. And then Kansas, it's hard to see how they're going to do without Azubuike. So what do you got here? You've South Point. What do you got?
An interesting prop that I noticed pop up over this weekend. Jimmy Vaccaro.
Jimmy Vaccaro, sure.
And the South Point, Las Vegas, is offering a prop where you can take four teams versus the field for the national championship. And the four teams you get, Wags, are Duke, Gonzaga, Michigan, and Kansas.
Yep.
And you're laying minus 110 versus the rest of the field at minus 110.
We'd have to go back to the preview issue, but I think I've got three of those four teams in my Final Four, if I remember correctly.
Wow, impressive.
I might have had Virginia. It's either Virginia or I don't know if I had Kentucky. I think you had Kentucky. So Michigan may have been the team that wasn't in my original, but I like Vaccaro. He's thinking.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting prop. Some of the teams that I think that could damage this prop are Virginia and Tennessee are two of my top favorite teams that I think could maybe squeeze in and win this championship.
What about your Wolfpack?
The Wolfpack, I'm a little down on right now. I'm not sure that they can make a run deep this year.
Okay. What spots are you in this week, action in college basketball?
Well, the first game I picked out is a Wednesday nighter, back to the Big East, where the Creighton Blue Jays are going on the road to St. John's. And this Creighton team has been reeling of late. They've lost a few in a row. And I think that St. John's is really picking it up at the right time. They play incredibly good defense, ranked in the top 32. And I think that their defense is going to be able to stifle that Creighton offense and really shut them down. And I like St. John's to cover what I'm projecting to be a three-point spread in this one.
I got you. St. John's is definitely one of those teams that we talked about before. They have lost some games lately. I just think Creighton is so bad defensively. So I like this spot with the Johnnies. All right, the next game you've got is Kansas State at Oklahoma. Oklahoma's playing good basketball. They are under the radar for sure in the Big 12. They're 8-point favorites at home on Wednesday. You're noting your favorite in the 8 to 10 point range. Is that your theory here?
Yeah, and actually I'm pulling up the numbers now as they've been posted tonight, and Oklahoma is a 6.5-point favorite.
Okay,
so
value.
I'm going to put that bet in right now so I don't lose the value. But I'm just looking at the matchups in this one, and both of these teams are incredibly good defensively.
Yep.
Kansas State's ranked 5th and Oklahoma is 8th.
Yep.
But the main difference in this game is that Kansas State offense. They're dreadful.
They are bad.
210th. and I just think that Oklahoma is going to be able to score quite a bit more points on them. The total is only 129, so those offensive points are going to be extra valuable. Mm-hmm. And I'm also looking at the Oklahoma Sooners ATS record this year is 12-2 against the number.
Smoking.
And 9-1 as a favorite. So they're only laying 6.5 points in this one. I'm going to be betting on Oklahoma.
I like that too. Definitely like that spot. Butler at DePaul, another Wednesday magic. The Blue Demons are playing pretty good basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're not that high in KenPom from what I've noted. They're still in the hundreds, but they've been playing very competitively. And the fact that it's a pick 'em on your rating, it's kind of curious, actually. I mean, Butler has definitely been better than them in the past, but I do like that they got the win over Seton Hall and then St. John's, so I'm with you with DePaul and the pick'em here.
Yeah, the hometown DePaul Blue Demons has been a team that I've been eyeballing a lot lately, and they have some impressive wins this season over Seton Hall at home, and they just won at St. John's on the road last time out.
Yep.
And Butler's schedule is kind of a sandwich spot here. After playing Xavier over the weekend, they've got St. John's on deck next weekend.
Right.
And I think that DePaul is going to have a pretty big advantage on the glass here. Mm-hmm. They're 7th ranked in defensive rebounding, and Butler's at 184. Mm-hmm. I think that the Butler name recognition is probably overvaluing the number here in this game.
Right.
And they're only 1-3 against the spread on the road this season. Hmm. I'm pulling up the numbers now, and actually DePaul is plus 2.5. So I had this game listed as a pick 'em, which makes it an easy play for me. I'm going to take the 2.5 points with DePaul.
Take the points. Wintrust Arena will be rocking tomorrow.
Yeah, I thought about popping over there too.
Yeah, it's my alma mater for my master's. So.
Yeah.
All right, the next game you've got is San Francisco, the Dons. You think they're going to get back on the horse at Pacific? They're 7-point favorites on the road. Now, this is on Thursday, this game. Yeah, I see what you said here. Pacific's bad on offense. They're only 157th in the rating, and the Dons need to bounce back after that tough loss. Is that your theory?
Yeah, I think that the Dons' defense is probably going to get after Pacific a little bit here, and it's a bounce-back spot. Giving away that game to Gonzaga is probably having them seething right now in practice.
Absolutely.
And I can picture them right now in the gym just putting up shots and getting after it on defense. And I think that they'll be able to cover the 7 points, specifically shutting down that Pacific 3-point attack where San Francisco is only allowing 29% 3-point shooting this year.
Gotcha. All right, another Thursday night matchup that I like. I don't know if we have the spread for it yet, but Oregon is at Arizona. That's Thursday the 17th as well. You know, Arizona quietly is playing good basketball. A lot of people obviously have beaten up the program for the old FBI investigation. And to be honest with you, I kind of written them off as well. We've kind of written off the Pac-12 in general. But I like this Arizona team. You know, they're 25th in defensive efficiency. What do you got the game at?
So my numbers have this game as a pick'em on a neutral floor. Arizona being the home team would give them a 4-point spread at minus four.
Yeah, I think 4 points is reasonable. Maybe it'll be even less with the value. But the Ducks actually are not playing great on the road, and they've dropped their last two of three at home. So I think when this is actually their Arizona trip. They'll play Arizona and Arizona State in back-to-back games. So I really like Arizona in this spot.
Okay, I agree with you. I mean, you can't go wrong with the home team. After last week and watching some of these Pac-12 games, I swore to myself that I'm done betting on the Pac-12. So I'm going to be staying away, but I definitely see here that Arizona has the stronger numbers. They're 25th ranked in defense, mm-hmm. which obviously is good news for the home team.
Yep, absolutely. Looks like you also like a Big Ten matchup, Northwestern at Rutgers for the under.
Yeah, you know how we like the Friday night action on this station. And Northwestern is playing that weird Friday night schedule again this week for the Big Ten. And they're going on the road to Rutgers. Both of these teams play stellar defense, ranked in the 40s, 41 and 42 respectively. And additionally, both of them are super slow in pace in the bottom 280 and 238 of Division One. Mm-hmm. And if you add all that up and combine it with a Friday night odd start time, I think this game stays under. I'm projecting a total of 128.
Okay, I can see that. A couple more games. Furman at Wofford. You know, Furman was and that's Saturday on the 19th. Furman, you know, the Paladins were basically the national darling. They were in the top 25 for a while after some big wins. They've kind of fallen on some hard times as they entered conference play. And Wofford actually is the team you got to watch out for. So Wofford's a 10-point favorite at home. It's a big number, but I like this Wofford team. They are actually 40 overall in KenPom, which is great for a mid-major. And they're 22nd in offense. I like the Terriers to defend their home court in this game.
Yeah, Wofford has definitely been a bet-on team for me this year, too. They've really tested themselves early on in the season, going on the road to North Carolina. Mm-hmm. They played against other in-state rivals there. And they just have supreme numbers here. They're 21st ranked in home offensive field goal percentage. And they are equally good rebounding, 5th ranked in defensive rebounding. And
nice.
You know I love rebounding teams.
You're the rebound guy. All right, last game we'll cover kind of generally is the big game. Virginia's playing at Duke. You're rating the game at Duke being favored at home by 5.5 points, or I know on a neutral court, so that would be 9.5, right?
Yeah, so this one's hard for me to predict. We talked about earlier that Trey Jones injury just throws a whole wrench into the entire mess. But yeah, 5.5 on a neutral.
Mm-hmm. I like Virginia in the game in general, but I do have to see the spread. We'll see what happens. I obviously was eyeing it more, thinking they get like 10 points on the road or something. But that changes with the injuries. It should be an epic game. I really want to see if this Virginia offense is for real. They have been ranked, you know, as we noted before, they're 6th in offensive efficiency, which is normally much lower, maybe in the 40s, and they're 2nd in defensive efficiency. So I actually really like, more and more we talk about it with the Duke injuries, I'm going to like Virginia, but hopefully they're not favored on the road.
Yeah, this line is going to be super interesting. The total as well, it's just going to be a crapshoot to where it comes out at.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the NBA. What do you got here?
Well, I saw this trend pop up in my feed last week, and I found it to be rather interesting, where two teams are playing basically back-to-back, a home-and-home series, and the team that loses the first meeting going into that second game is 9-2 straight up and 8-3 against the spread.
So it's a bounce back spot, basically.
The Washington Wizards pulled it off last week against the 76ers. Mm-hmm. And then again, over the weekend, San Antonio beat Oklahoma City on Thursday night, turned around and went to OKC on Saturday. And OKC covered as home 6-point favorites. So that's something I'm going to be looking forward to. Just a nice little trend in the NBA.
Looks like you also have some top five teams that are basically covering the spread in general. The Mavs are top of the list at 26-17 for the year. You got the Spurs at 26-18. The Kings, we talked about, they're improved.
Yeah.
25-17-1. Your Bucks, 24-17-1. And then the Clippers, 24-18. Who do you got for the bottom five?
It's crazy here to look at these lists because the ATS top five or five teams that you wouldn't consider to be good teams.
Right.
But when you look at the ATS bottom five, these are probably some of the what you would think are the best teams in the league. Mm-hmm. Golden State's in there at 18 and 25.
Yep.
New Orleans, 18 and 24. Memphis Grizzlies are 18 and 23. And then rounded out by Detroit and LeBron's L.A. Lakers. So maybe some value overvaluing
of those players.
Yeah, the perception of the public just goes to show you that night in and night out, these spreads are inflated because people think they're good teams.
Got to dig more into the metrics for the NBA before I start betting. I'll start doing that in February, probably when football's over. But yeah, I mean, I definitely want to get some bets in there. And like you said, I mean, these guys are all professionals. They're going to lay it on the line. They're not going to just roll over every time.
Yeah, and Golden State's still minus 150 favorite to win the championship. So.
Yeah, as they probably should be.
Yeah.
But Toronto plus 600 and Boston plus 950. So there's some value. And I want to tell you, your Bucks, they still got a chance in there. And your Antetokounmpo MVP pick is, it's only Harden that's got him right now.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
All right, let's talk really quickly about the NHL trend that has been sweeping the world, I guess. So essentially what it is that you can bet not just on, you know, the overall total of the puck, you know, goal scored or the puck line for a game. You can actually bet for the first period. And there's a couple teams hitting at 80% in their games over the puck line across the board. The average puck line is usually 1.5, right?
Yeah. Nearly every single hockey game first period total is 1.5. I've right. never seen it different.
Which makes sense. So the Blackhawks are top of the list at, you know, just under 80%. And in fact, I think it was yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday or there was, I don't know, they were talking about a VSiN how yesterday that there were 13 goals scored in the Blackhawks game yesterday, yeah. but only one in the first period.
Yeah, count myself as a loser into that. It was 1-0 at the end of the first period, and the final was like 8-5.
That's hilarious. But you've been actually taking advantage of this trend so far.
Yeah, definitely count me late to the party as I missed a run that the Tampa Bay Lightning went on of 18 in a row first period overs. But I've gotten in on the last six between Tampa Bay and Chicago, and I'm 4-2, laying about minus 140 on average in each game.
Okay.
And I'm checking my numbers here, and I'm still up 165 units. Mm-hmm. So looking good. And I've got a list here of the records, and the Lightning are top of the list, 80%, Blackhawks at 80%. Mm-hmm. There's a couple teams below there. The Blue Jackets, Sharks, and Penguins are all above 60% first period overs as well. So I mean, it's lots of teams here scoring goals.
Like printing money.
Yeah.
That's now, what they've been talking about on VSiN. They're just like, you got to do it. You got to do it every time. They've been hammering Twitter on it.
Yeah. I mean, that VIG is obviously pretty high, but yeah. even if you're laying up to minus 150, you have to hit 66%. And there are one, two, three, four teams in the NHL that are over 66% to that over.
Now, you did say that you got to be wary. Like tonight, I think it was the Lightning are playing the Stars. The Stars are the lowest on the list. They're only 33% of the time. So maybe you got to check that matchup on a night-by-night basis.
Absolutely. And I did stay away from that Lightning first period over tonight.
Smart man. All right. We've had a long pod. Let's jump into the head-to-head here. We're going to go over the two championship games and then some other big games. First, let's do the Rams at the Saints. The Saints are 3.5-point favorites at home. What say you in this one, Action?
Well, I'm going to be taking the LA Rams in the 3.5 points here. I think we touched on it to death earlier that all these teams are so close in the metrics, and obviously the spread shows that too. But I think that getting the extra 0.5 point here is going to be very important in what I project to be a tight game. And I really am going back to just watching that Saints offense play poorly the past 5 or 6 weeks. And I know that Teddy was in there one game, but Drew Brees just does not look 100% to me. And I don't think that they're going to be blowing anybody away. So I'll take the Rams. How about you?
I'm going to go with the Saints. It's a little bit different than my futures pick. I have the futures ticket on the Rams. But there's two different handicaps here. One is that I think the Saints, ironically, have... they're playing defense, which is rare for the Saints. They're the better defense in this case, and they're really good against the run. Obviously, the Rams, they have to run the ball to make that offense go, and I think that they'll be able to stop Gurley at least to some extent. The other thing is I just don't trust Jared Goff. I think that he actually didn't have to play very well in the win against the Cowboys. He's going to have to play better. So I just kind of see game flow being the Saints are going to stop the run. Goff has to make quality throws, and I don't trust him to do it. He doesn't have Cooper Kupp as security blanket, which he had him in the last game to put up all those points. And 3.5, I don't like that number personally. The head-to-head, I'll take the three, you know, I'll give you the 3.5, but I'm going to wait for this to get closer to 3 in real betting time if I'm going to bet it or tease it. So I just think the Saints are the better team, and they're going to win this game and hopefully cover that 3.5.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about earlier, it does look like this number is trending to 3, so you may be able to get that if you're open to it.
Good. The next game, Patriots at Chiefs. This is an awesome game. Chiefs are 3-point favorites at home. We've kind of touched on it a little bit. I know where you stand, I think, anyway. I'm going to go against, well, I'm going to go with the Patriots here. You're giving me 3 points. Definitely, I'll take those points. I just trust Brady in this spot. Cold weather game. Belichick to figure out a way to slow down the Chiefs. Obviously, it's a road game, which they haven't been good on the road in a while, and also in the championship games. But the times that the Patriots have lost on the road in the championship have been against really good defenses or Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
So Denver back-to-back and Peyton Manning. So to me, I trust Brady in this spot to score, and I trust Belichick to find a way to slow down the Chiefs, and I think they're going to win the game outright, but you know, but also get this cover.
Well, for me, my Chiefs angle really has to do with the defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I gave them all kinds of tough love last week in my handicap against the Colts, and boy, did they show up and prove me wrong. And
they did.
You know, I kind of overlooked the fact that this defense has played really well at home this year.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, they were against a ton of bottom tier offenses, but I think that the Chiefs are going to be able to step up and shut down that Patriots offense a little bit more than the sieve of the Chargers did last weekend. And then on the other side of the ball, Patrick Mahomes is just,
he's the man,
otherworldly. I mean, some of the throws that he threw last weekend were out of this mind, and I think that he's going to be able to show Belichick what he's got, and that's going to be a fascinating matchup to see him go against that Belichick defense. But I like the Chiefs, and as long as this game is at a field goal, I'm going to be on them -3.
And the Chiefs are really good at sacking the quarterback, and that's what you need to do to stop Brady. So I also didn't mention, I think they're going to run the ball. The Patriots are going to try to run it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Colts didn't do it, but Patriots will stick to it. So
true. That's true.
All right, let's go into some college basketball picks. The first one is the big game, the Virginia against Duke. We're not going to pick the side in this one. We're going to go with the total. The total right now projected is 139. What's on this one, Action?
Well, these two teams are incredible on defense. Mm-hmm. They're second and third ranked in adjusted D. And for that reason, I'm going to be looking to play this game under the total. I think that the Trey Jones factor is probably going to have a huge effect too. Although when he went out, they ended up in the 90s against Syracuse.
Yeah.
But Virginia is just a whole other animal. I watched them play last weekend against Clemson, and they just stifled them. They couldn't do anything on offense.
Mm-hmm.
And although I know they won't have that much success against Duke, I think they'll control the tempo here, and this game will go under.
Okay. I think that what I've mentioned before, Virginia this year is different because they are better offensively. And as good as Duke is defensively, if they don't have that guy at point guard to slow him down, and I just think this marquee game, it just makes for a little bit higher scoring game. It's not that Virginia wants to run and gun with Duke, but there's going to be a lot more big shots, and I think it's going to have to be a little bit more up-tempo than a traditional Virginia game. And I think they've been averaging over 70 points a game, so this 139 doesn't seem that difficult to get to. So I'm definitely taking the over on this one.
Yeah, and 139, it must be said, will be the lowest total that Duke has had all season. I think I read last night 147 was the lowest against Syracuse. So definitely maybe some value there.
Great. The last game is back in the Big Ten. Michigan is going to Wisconsin. The Badgers are 2-point underdogs at home. And I'm going to stick with Michigan. I love Beilein. I think he's just a wizard. That offense is playing good enough to win games, and that defense is just top-notch. Wisconsin has played well, and as I mentioned, I think they're underrated, but I think that Michigan is a class above, and since it's only 2 points, I think that Michigan can cover that number.
Well, these two teams historically play incredibly close games every time in and out. They're down to the last basket, and Wisconsin really impressed me last night in their comeback against Maryland, although it fell a little bit short in the end. Ethan Happ is a star, and he's going to get his in this game. And I think it's going to be a very low-scoring affair, too, which gives Wisconsin a little bit of value playing at home. And I think the real X factor in this game is going to be that guard, Dimitri Trice. If he can get hot from the three-point line, I think Wisconsin has a good chance at a home upset here.
Okay. We'll see what happens. That's on Sunday?
Saturday.
Saturday. Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, well, that wraps up episode 21 of the Side Action Podcast. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Please rate the podcast, you know, like the podcast, subscribe, unsubscribe, get our metrics up. And then you can follow me personally at Wegspool on Twitter and Instagram.
You can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
Follow the podcast at Side Action Pod on Twitter. Action's been giving out picks every week in addition to football. He's doing college basketball. I think he did a little bit. I don't know if you did. Did you do a soccer one recently?
No soccer recently, but the college basketball picks have been pretty good, actually. Yeah. So hopefully we can keep that rolling.
The guy's trying to give you money. That's all.
Thank you all for listening, and enjoy the conference championships this weekend.
All right. We'll see you next week.
That's a wrap for this episode of the Side Action Podcast. We appreciate all of your listens, and thank you for joining us. We'll see you all again next week on Thursday for some more hot picks and side action. Side Action Podcast, its owners and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of this podcast, and opinions between talk show hosts may conflict. Individuals following the advice given on the podcast accept their own risk of losses from wagers made, as the Side Action Podcast, its owners, hosts, associates, or guests will not guarantee any advice given. The opinions and advice given on the Side Action Podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Intro and outro and transition music credits. Song titles, Jerry 5 and District 4 by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.org. License under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. creativecommons.org/licenses/by 3.0.